All right, morning. Today's daf is Yud Aleph. Okay, and we started the second perek of Krisus, and we are towards the top of Daf Testament Aleph. Okay, a couple things before we begin. Again, learning to do this morning is for a continued refuah shlema for Rafael Zakai Abraham Ben Akira Avigail. We talked yesterday about the Mechusrei Kapar. The second parak of Krisus talks about those people who are Mechusrei Kapar. Mechusrei Kapar simply means that they're finishing up their Tahara process, and the last stage of the Tahara process is to bring Karbanos. Usually it's done on the 8th day. For Yoledes, it's done on the 41st or 81st day, depending on whether she had a boy or girl, respectively. And until they bring their Karbanos, they can't go into the Beis HaMikdash nor eat Karbanos themselves. To that, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says, I'd like to add one more thing to the list, and that is a ger, a convert. Convert's mechusrei kapara. A ger is not a complete ger until he brings karbanos. So how do we know that? Where in the Torah does it say that? So it mentions it in Parsha Shlach. It's a reference. Torah's not explicit, but there's a reference to it in Parsha Shlach that a ger needs to bring karbanos. Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Yedal, the Pasuk says, V'chi agur yitchem ger, asher betochem ador seichem. If there is a ger amongst you, so v'asa yishereach nechoch la'Hashem kasher ta'asu kein ya'aseh. Just like you did, so too he should do. So just like you brought karbanos, so he should bring karbanos as well. Where do we bring karbanos? Where do we find that we ourselves brought karbanos? So that goes to back to Parshas Mishpatim, the end of Parshas Mishpatim. So the Perek of Dala, the Torah describes how at Ma'amad Har Sinai, so we brought karbanos. So we brought karbanos. Now, what karbanos did we bring? So it's very clear from the pesukim, we brought an ola and we brought a shlamim. So ostensibly, what that means is that when you have a ger and he wants to convert, so he's got to bring an ola and a shlamim. Of course, nowadays he brings neither, but that's the point we're going to get to a little bit later on this morning, in just a couple of minutes. So he has to bring an ola and a shlamim. What we learned yesterday's daf is that it doesn't have to be an ola and a shlamim. Really, the ola is the essential karban, and the shlamim is the non-essential karban. Okay, where is that indicated? How do we know that the ola becomes the essential shlamim? So we go back to Parsha Shlach, and I reread Parsha Shlach again, because it says, V'chi agur yitchem geru asher besochem adorasechem ve'asa ishe reyach nechoach la'ashem. And he does ishe. Now ishe means what? Something that's burnt on the fire. So shlamim is parts of the shlamim burnt on the fire, but you talk about what is fundamentally burnt on the fire. That's talking about a karbanola. Okay, so the karbanola really is the essential karban of the ger. If he would like to, he could bring a pair of birds. Pair of birds. So there's no mention at all of birds. Not in Parshas Mishpatim. Neither in Parshas Shlach. There's no mention of birds whatsoever. So drasha. We learned yesterday via drasha that he could bring birds as well. He has to bring a pair of birds. There's no such thing as not a pair of birds. I know that wasn't a great sentence, but it'll work. In other words, birds always come in a pair. Right? Let's take out the negatives. There is one occasion, the Gemara noted yesterday, that if you want to give one bird as an adava, you could do that, but as an obligation, birds never come not in a pair. Okay, sorry. Back to my double negative. He brings a pair of birds. Each bird is going to be an ola. It's certainly not, one of the birds is not going to be a chatos. Usually the pair means one's an ola and one's a chatos. But this gear is going to bring a pair of ola birds. How about a carbon mincha? Maybe the gear could bring a carbon mincha. We saw Tosis yesterday. The Gemara suggestion over here was about mincha sesachim. So the Gemara says no. No, the mincha is out of the question because it has to be something with blood. Right, we need blood. So, Hartzaz Dam. Okay, and this is the point that we got to yesterday. We are in Testament Aleph. We are Amar Mar. The last very short line of the Amar. It's about 20 lines from the top of the page. So the Gemara now says that there were three components to our conversion process when we were at Ma'amad Har Sinai, which then has to be mimicked by the convert. So number one, we had Mila. Dichsiv. Now, how do we know we had Mila? Where does it say Mila? Now again, you go back to either Parshas Yisro or to Parshas Mishpatim, you won't see a mention of Mila. So how do we know? So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to have to work backwards. We're going to see it either in Sefer Yoshua or in Yechezkel. First, we turn to Sefer Yehoshua. Ki mulim hayu kol ha'am hayotzim. When you left Egypt, you became circumcised, right? In Yehoshua Perikei, it's the second time after leaving Egypt that we become circumcised as a nation, right? I know it's 40 years later, and I know there were a lot of births in between this point and the time we left Egypt, but as we all know, there was no milah that was done in the desert. The only milah that was done was only as we left Mitzrayim. We had to do milah because we need to bring Karm Pesach in. You can't bring a Karm Pesach without a milah, so we did milah then. But after that point in time, that was it, done. We never did milah again. But anyway, that's one indication that we did a milah as part of the Mamad Har Sinai experience. And they didn't bring Karm Pesach in the desert also. One time in the desert.
Yeah, wait, the story of Pesach Sheni.
That was the one time.
The one time. But were they circumcised?
Yeah.
They were all circumcised from the first circumcision then?
And there was nobody who was born between that and the first year and the second year?
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Okay.
They didn't eat. They were too little to eat.
Yeah, but if you have an uncircumcised child in your house, you can't eat Karban Pesach. Okay, it's a problem. Inami mehach, or the Gemara says, according to Pasuk in Yecheskel. Now, we are just a breath under, we're a little over 1 week away from Seder night. A Pasuk should ring familiar. Ve'avor alaych ve'erech misbosesus bedamayich, v'omalach bedamayich chayi, v'omalach bedamayich chayi. Also say that at Bris Milah as well. Go figure. And we don't know a whole lot of Yecheskel, but this pasuk we do know. We'll be saying it at the Seder. So, and I saw you rolling around in your blood. I say that you're going to live in your blood. And again, another allusion, not a clear indication, but an allusion that as we exited Mitzrayim, and exiting Mitzrayim was all about the blood, right? The first makkah, right? The blood that was put on the doorposts, the blood of the Karban Pesach, the blood of the Bris Milah. There was a lot of blood upon the exiting of Egypt. So Hartzaz Dam and Dichsiv, and finally the last component is Hartzaz Dam. Hartzaz Dam means the sprinkling of the blood, meaning carbon. Carbon also was an essential component. Dichsiv, Aishlach, Snare, Bnei Yisrael. So, the Bnei Yisrael, that's the pasuk that we quoted in the end of Parshas Mishpatim. Wonderful. So, Ela Tvila Minalan. How about Tvila? Where do we see that we toveled? Meaning, it's funny, I ask anyone in this room, what's the most important part about the conversion? So everyone's going to say toveling in the mikvah. It's funny, of the things that are required, i.e. bris milah, i.e. karbanos, the Gemara was like, oh, those we have psukim for. How about tefillah? Okay, so the Gemara says, well, for tefillah, you're going to have to give an argument, the svara. Well, the Torah does describe sprinkling, hazaah. And as a general rule, we know that there's no sprinkling without toveling in the mikvah. Okay? Fine. Elamiata aina deleka karban lo nekabel geirim. So now, all this leads us to a very...
If they weren't bringing a korban, they wouldn't be toveling.
Well, it's... the sprinkling over here is referring to the sprinkling of the blood on the nation. It's like the sprinkling of the paraduma, if you will. In other words, you don't sprinkle without first toveling in the mikvah. All right.
Yeah.
Without an accompanying tefillah. All this leads us to a very basic question, which is, what about nowadays? So now we've established that in order to convert, you need three things. You need to tovel in the mikvah, you need a bris milah, and you need karban. So nowadays, without a base of mikdash, and we haven't had one for just about 2,000 years, so we're in a bit of a bind, because we still do accept converts, and the Gemara acknowledges that. The Gemara itself was, finally edited 400 or 500 years after the destruction of the Temple. So we do accept converts, but we don't have a base of Mikdash, and they're not offering karbanos. How does that work? So Amar Rav Acher by Yaakov v'chiyaguri chem ger asher b'sosochechem. So the Gemara goes back to our pesukim regarding shlach. Remember, the whole process of conversion is all teased out from a pasuk in Parsha Shlach. Now the Gemara actually doesn't quote the punchline. The punchline is a continuation of the pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'chi agur itachem ger, o asher besochechem ledoroseichem." The pasuk says it's for all generations. So that means that the process of conversion can happen always. So it's a little bit reversed in terms of the logic, but the logic basically is once the Torah establishes that we can always accept converts, so it must be that the bring of the carbon is not an essential component of conversion. Tana Rabbanan Gerber's Man Zed Sarach Shafish Rova Lakino. Okay. So now the Gemara says like this. Okay, so now we don't have a Beis Hamikdash and they can't bring a carbon. But they're still obligated, meaning there's still this obligation. It's not ma'akev. It won't hold back the conversion, but there's still a requirement of bringing a carbon. So the Gemara quotes Braisa anonymously. So here's what they should do. So they should convert, set aside money. The Gemara describes it as being a rova, a quarter of a, presumably a dinar, right, a shekel, and put that aside for the purchasing of the carbon. So bimhera b'yameinu, when the Beis HaMikdash is built, so they're going to have their money already ready and prepared.
A quarter of a shekel buys a carbon?
Birds, a pair of birds.
How much was the shekel and how much did the
dinar? Well, the shekel and dinar are equivalent. They're the same. Okay, that's one and the same. So you remember, we did this just a couple days ago where the price of birds skyrocketed and then it dropped. It dropped to a quarter.
It dropped
to Rivasayim,
which is two quarters. And that was
for a pair.
Right, a quarter for a pair.
Oh.
So okay, so the Gemara says so. Set aside a rova. So Amar Rabbi Shimon Kvar Nimna Lav Rabbi Yochum and Zaka Uvat La Mimnei Atakal. Now Rabbi Yochum and Zaka said no, bad minhag, meaning Rabbi Yochum and Zaka says it's not good. It's not going to end up well.
Does the carver have to bring one bird or two birds?
A pair. The Gemara said yesterday a pair of birds.
So why are they setting aside one for one bird, Stuart?
I assume it's a quarter for both. Okay, we could discuss this later.
Yeah,
all right.
Never mind.
Okay, fine. So the so it's a bad idea because what's going to happen now is you're going to have money and the money and the money is just going to sit around and it's just sitting around there for a long time. Not everyone's going to realize that was money set aside for your carbon. Meaning the money is hektish and then you're going to use the money for your own personal good and that's called me'ila. And so Rav Yochum Azaki says just not a good idea. Mimnei atakala. Amrav Idi Bar Gershom Amrav Ad Bar Ava Halachik Rabbi Shimon. Now the halach is in fact like Rabbi Shimon, as we just quoted, that you should not set aside money for the carbon. Okay, so I don't know how long a tekufa we were talking about, but there was a period post destruction of the temple where they did set aside money. At least it seems that way. And Rav Yochum and Zakkai, who is shortly after the destruction of the temple, in fact, saw the destruction of the temple. In fact, if we're going to associate anybody with number of institutions that were made, number of takanas that were made because of the destruction of the temple, that would be Rav Yochum and Zakkai. So he was mevatel. He says, don't set aside money for your karbanos, for your pair of birds. Amar vidi bar gershom, amar avada bar ava, halachik Rabbi Shimon, v'ikad amatzin laha, al hadam. Now, some people take this last statement that the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon and does not attach it to what we just learned, but attached it to a different discussion and a different debate. The Tanur Rabbanan Ger Toshav. Now, Ger Toshav refers to an alien, right? Not unidentified, but an alien meaning somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael, not a Ger Tzedek, not somebody who fully converts, but basically somebody who says, look, I'm going to live in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm not going to be Oved Avodah Zarah. Now, it's a little bit interesting because every non-Jew should not be being Oved Avodah Zarah, meaning it's one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. So it's universal law not to be Oved Avodah Zarah. What makes him so special? He comes into Eretz Yisrael, and he says, okay, people, this time it's for real. No Avodah Zarah for me.
Right.
So I guess we could use that terminology. It's funny. It makes me smile. But I guess we could use that terminology that he's a legal alien. So the Ger Toshav. You'll take a look at Rashi right here on the Gemara. Shekibo alav shalolav adavodas kochavim kagon Naman. He uses an example of Naman. Right. Lived during the time of Gehazi and Elio. So okay, fine. So the So that is a Ger Toshav. Now, this Ger Toshav is not Jewish, right? Not a convert. He's just simply a legal alien in Israel saying, that's it. And on his passport, it says, not an idol worshiper. Okay, That's our Ger Toshav. Now, we take care of the Ger Toshav, meaning the Torah in many occasions instructs us that if you have a Ger living amongst you, so you take care of him. I'll give you a simple example. The Torah says, let's say you have an animal that turns into a nevela or a trefa. So what do you do with that animal? You can't eat it. So give it to a Ger. Right? And the Torah says, give it to a Ger. Meaning, don't sell it to him. Right? Don't make business out of it, but give it to him. Give it to the Ger. Take care of him. Okay, so we are instructed, once we have our legal aliens, we are instructed to take care of them. So, mutar la'asos melacha b'shabbos la'atzmo ki yisro b'chol shel moed. Now, basically, the discussion over here, it's an interesting debate, and the Gemara is not going to really speak much about it, but basically, what Shabbos for him going to be like? It's not going to be like Shabbos for you and me. For you and me, Shabbos is very, very organized and very restrictive, right? And I don't mean that in a negative way. Right. In other words, we have a very clear demarcation in terms of what we can and cannot do on Shabbos. Good. That's our Shabbos. What's his Shabbos going to look like? Because it's not Shabbos. In fact, it sounds like, the Gemara doesn't say this, it sounds like for him Shabbos is not even an option. He shouldn't be Shabbos. Meaning if he wants Shabbos, so he'll be a full convert. He doesn't want full conversion. He wants to just simply be a Ger Toshav. So for him, Shabbos is going to be a modified version of Shabbos. What's it going to be? So the first opinion of this Braisa, we'll call it the Tanna Kamma, is that it's Ki Yisrael B'chol Shel Moed, and it's going to be like Archol HaMoed. Right? Archol HaMoed, you know, we do some malacha, and if necessary, we'll do even a little more malacha. Right? The Davar HaAveh, we have a term on Chol HaMoed to do malacha. Okay, so that's what his Shabbos is going to be like. If it's Davar HaAved, so then he could do it. Rabbi Kiva Amar Ki Yisrael B'Yom Tov. Now Rabbi Kiva says, no, his Shabbos looks a little bit more like our Shabbos. His Shabbos is going to look like Yom Tov. Like Yom Tov, what's the noted difference between Yom Tov versus Shabbos? Cooking. Okay, so on his Shabbos, he can cook. It'll be the same day as our Shabbos, but...
Why are there any restrictions?
Huh?
He's not Jewish. Why is there any restrictions?
Ger Toshav, meaning he's living in Israel. He's living amongst us. Again, the Gemara doesn't speak much about this in terms of the why. Meaning, why is it that he needs to keep some semblance of Shabbos? I'm not sure. It's an interesting topic of discussion. But okay, Rabbi Yossi Omer Ger Toshav Oseh B'Shabbos La'atzmo Ki Yisrael B'chol. And Rabbi Yossi says, what do you mean? His Shabbos is going to be like a total weekday. Now La'atzmo, in other words, he can't do malacha for us, but for himself, he can do whatever he wants. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Echad Ger Toshav, Echad Ovei Kochavim, Eved V'Yama Toshavim, Osim Malacha B'Shabbos Atman, Ki Yisrael B'Chol. They do Malacha for themselves, like Yisrael does during the week. What's the difference between this Rabbi Shimon position and the Rabbi Yossi position? I don't know. Okay, I'm not sure. Anyway, on this point, the Gemara says, that's where the Amar of Acher Yaakov, that the halacha, sorry, that's the, I'm sorry, Amar of Ivi Bar Gershom, Amar of Ada Bar Ava, that the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon, meaning the last opinion that we just quoted. Okay. Start the next Mishnah, Elu Mivin Al Azadon Kishogeg. Most of the time you bring a carbon chattis, it's because Shogeg. You made a mistake. There are occasions, four of them in total, where, am I right about four? Yeah, I said four in the first Mishnah. So four occasions where you're going to bring a carbon, even if it's if you do the aver b'mezid. Okay, unusual, but there are four times. Habala shifcha, number one, a man has relations with a shifcha kananis. Now, shifcha kananis, that's a little bit strange. Meaning, we'll talk more about it in just a moment. V'nazir shenitma. A nazir that becomes tamei, so he needs to bring karbanos to recount his nazirus. So he'll bring it even if he does it on purpose.
Bring the same one if it's by accident or if it's on purpose for these examples.
It'll be the same karban. Shvuos ha'edos, shvuos ha'pikadon. Now shvuos ha'edos means like this: you have testimony. You saw an event. You have testimony. Now the basin comes over to you and says to you, right? They subpoena you. And they say, okay, come to court and provide your testimony. And you look at the base and you say, I don't know what you're talking about. I got no testimony over here. And then they subpoena you. You come to court and you say you must swear that you don't have testimony. and you swear that you don't have testimony. Okay, and then afterwards you have sleepless nights, your conscience gets the best of you, and you finally come forward and say, I lied. And not only did I lied under oath. So this is now requiring a person to bring a karban shvua. Right now, the karban that he brings is a special karban. It's not a regular chatas. It's what's called an ol of a yared. It depends on his financial situation. That will determine the type of karban chatas that he brings, but nevertheless, he brings a karban chatas. For this individual, he brings the karban whether he violates it b'shogeg or b'mezid. Meaning he knows it's wrong and he still makes a shvua. He's still going to bring a karban chatas. I mentioned this before. I think the idea over here is very simple. Meaning, when it comes to Shavuos Ha'edus, it's almost like the Torah acknowledges, like, I understand it, I get it. Meaning, right, if anyone ever had to go to court, you realize it's nothing good. Especially if all you are is just a witness, so it's understandable. Meaning, all you're going to do is get grilled. You're going to, right, and I'm not talking about just the American court system. Meaning, even in Beis Din, you're going to get grilled. And they're going to look to trip you up. And it's just not enjoyable. It's not a pleasant experience. So it's almost as if the Torah is saying, like, I understand, even b'mezid, it's almost like justifiable. It's not. But at least I understand why it is that you said you didn't have testimony. So then when you come forward and you say, I lied, and I lied under oath, so you have a chance to be mechaper, and that kapar comes through a karban. And finally, Shavuot Pikadon, someone comes over to you and says to you, can I have back the item that I deposited by you for watching? And you look at him and you say, what item? And then he says, you know, the item I gave you, and you just simply deny, you flatly deny it. And not only do you flatly deny, but then you go to court and you actually swear that you don't have it. And again, your conscience gets the best of you and you finally come clean on the fact that you actually had it. So in all of these cases, in all four of these cases, the Torah allows a person to be mechaper, even though he did any one of these averas, b'mezid. Chamisha mivin karban echad al averas harbe. Now, there are five people who are going to violate multiple isurim and bring one karban chatas. Chamisha mivin karban ol aviyareid, elu mivin karban achad al averas harbe. They are abala shivcha bias harbe, v'nazir shenit matumas harbe. So someone who has relations with the Shivcha multiple times, and a Nazir who becomes Tamei multiple times, even though he has repeated the offense multiple times, he's going to be only obligated to bring one Karban. Okay. Now, there was a lot of information in that Mishnah. The first point in that Mishnah was a person who has relations with a Shivcha. A person who has relations with a Shivcha, what is that? What did he do wrong? Meaning, a Shivcha Kanani. So first of all, right, all relations, all bias should be done in the context of marriage, right? A Jewish man cannot be married to a shivcha kananis, so in of itself already, it's a total breach of tznius, and it's a total breach of the derech of a Jew. Okay.
It's Gilui
Arayis. You see, but it's not.
It's not.
Gila Arayis is very defined. The Torah gives us in Parshas Achrimos and Kedoshim, who is an erva to you? So a man's mother, a man's sister, a man's daughter, right? Anida. Okay,
if there's anyone that puts a gun to your head and it's not one of those women, then you're supposed to...
Correct. This is not Gila Arayis. Okay. It's not Gila Arayis. But it's a total breach of how a Jew behaves. But moreover than that, however, in other words, fine. But a karban, what's the karban for? Meaning, what is the severity of the act? So the Torah there describes that she's necharefes le'ish. She is engaged to a man. Now that's strange. Who is she engaged to? So right, take a look at Rashi over there in the Parsha. So the Torah there describes that she is engaged to a Eved Ivri. Okay, an Eved Ivri, so somewhat of a strange halacha, but an Eved Ivri, once he's an indentured servant, can, in fact, be set up with a Shivcha Kananis.
Only if he's married.
Right, and only if he's married. Now, it's a strange type of relationship. It's you know, to call a marriage, hard to say, but it's a relationship. So if a man has relations, if a Jewish man has relations with this Shivcha Kananis, who is designated to an Eved Ivri, so it's... Right, it's not adultery, it's not Eishes Ish, but it's not right. In fact, how not right is it? So the Torah says that this man who had relations with this woman is now required to bring a carbon. What is the name of this carbon? It's called an asham, right? It's one of the carbon ashams. So fine. So now what we're learning over here is going to be two points. Point number one was the first part of the Mishnah, is that even if the man does so b'mezid, meaning it was not there was no, he didn't forget any halacha. He knew exactly what was going on. He knew exactly what he was doing wrong. But still, he's going to bring a carbon, even if he does have amazed it. Tanu Rabbanan, and the Gemara gives us the source of this halacha. Now, the Torah over here is a little bit redundant in the way it presents to us this information. Es chata so asher chata. The chait that he violated. The melamit shemevi carbon echad al averis arbe. So the first thing that we learn now it's a little bit out of order over here because this was the second part of the Mishnah, but I'm not going to fault the Braisa. The Braisa is just following the pasuk. The pasuk first talks about multiple averis resulting in one carbon, and then v'nislach lo mechata so asher chata, and then the Torah describes that he's going to be forgiven over the sin that he sinned. Again, another redundancy in the pasuk. Over the sin that he sinned, lasos, we're going to flip the words, mazid kishogeg. So we're going to treat the mazid like a shogeg, because why is the Torah giving us redundancy? Nazir shenitma minala. Now we're up to the next one, which is a nazir. So the Torah describes a nazir coming into contact with the dead. And the Torah there describes bifeta pitom. Now, those are two different words that say when it comes out of my mouth, the two words sound the same, but one's with an ayin, the other one's with an aleph. I don't make a distinction when I say my ayin, my aleph. You know what the Rambam writes about me? You can't ask me to daven for the amud. The Rambam says anyone who doesn't separate his ayin from his aleph is not fit to be a chazan, a shliach tzibur for the community. Okay? The Rambam would say that's Jewish. So so whenever they ask you to daven for the Amud and you don't want to daven for the Amud, just simply say, look, my ayin and my aleph, it all comes out the same. I can't daven. Correct. So b'fesa pitom. So peta is a shogeg. Now the word peta is equivalent to shogeg. V'cheinu omer. And let's back that up with other psukim. B'im b'peta below evaha dafo. Right, accidental murder. Right, what do we call that in America? Manslaughter, whatever we call it, wrongful death. So in b'fetah below eva hadafo pitom ze ones, and the word pitom that refers to ones. V'chein omer v'yom Hashem pitom Moshe. Right, after Miriam has spoken lashon hara about her brother, so the pasuk says a kadosh baruch appears to them pitom. Now pitom means suddenly. Pitom means right, not with their. It was ones. So Tanya Edith, the Gemara, says it slightly differently. The Braisa here quoted is going to say it a little bit differently, which is, Pitom is mezid, v'cheinu omer, arum re'e ra'a v'nistar. Okay? U'pitom avru v'nanshu. So pitom means that they're going to be punished, they violated Isurim b'mezid, and they're going to be punished. The nechtov kra, pitom demashma shogim, mashma mezid, mashma ones. So mezid va'onis kedama. Now, what we just have done is we've associated the word pitom with an aleph with mezid. We've associated it with ones. The Gemara says we can even go. We can even say that it's associated with shoging. Mashmanam shoging dichsev pesi yamin lechol davar. Okay, the simple people believe every word. Okay, which is so true. The v'lo nichtov. Okay, fine. So in other words, pitom is kind of like an ambiguous term, again, with an aleph. It could mean shogeg, it could mean mezid, it could mean ones. We've have psukim to back up each one of those interpretations. The word peta, with an ayin, clearly means shogeg. So the Gemara says, v'lo nichtav kra peta, so the Gemara says so. Once pitom is kind of like a universal term, so why does the Torah then have to write peta with an ayin? Look, if all the Torah was just simply written was the word pitom with an aleph, and it gives us kind of like almost like a menu. Pit'om could mean ones, it could mean shogeg, it could mean mazid. But look, we're talking about bringing a carbon, and specifically a carbon chatas. So I'll say to myself, without anything else, look, carbon chatas, I only bring a carbon chatas if it's a shogeg. Meaning, that's kol haTorah kula, that's the general rule. So I know that the word pit'om can go many different directions, but if you ask me, when do I normally bring a carbon, the answer is usually if it's shogeg. So the word peta with an ayin, that means shogeg. So now that I go to pitom, so pitom now I know can't mean shogeg because that's already covered by the word peta with an ayin. So now it forces me to translate the word pitom either mazid or ones. And I have to bring a carbon nevertheless. Okay. Shavuos Ha'edus. Again, just more of drushas, more psukim. Minal tana rabbanan b'kula namar v'nalam, v'kan lo namar v'nalam, l'chayev al ha'mezid kishogeg. Okay? When you read the end of Parshas Vayikra, and you go through the psukim regarding the Shavuos Ha'edus, so the Torah does not use the word v'nalam, and it was concealed from him, meaning that even if he knows that it's us or it's forbidden for him to suppress testimony, nevertheless, he's going to still bring a carbon chatas. Olivi Yori, to be more specific. Shvuos ha-pikadon minalan yalef techta mishvuos ha-edus. Now, shvuos ha-pikadon, gzeri shava. Chamish mevin karben echal aver tzar be-ketani habal ha-shif chabi tzar be-minalan. A man who has relations with a shivcha many times is still going to only be chayav one karben. Tan Rabbanan, this is going to sound familiar because we just quoted this braisa about 15 lines ago. Skip the parentheses. Okay, so again, the Torah is describing a mazid scenario, so shogeg is going to be like mazid. Okay, so we've established that if a man has multiple relations with a shivcha kananis, who is necherefes la'ish, so he's going to have to bring one karban for many acts of relations with one. The Gemara says, how about this? How about he has many relations with many different shivcha charufas? Okay? So, chayva kol achas v'achas, oinav chayva ela achas. Amalei chayva kol achas v'achas. So the answer is, he's going to be obligated to bring a carbon for every woman they had relations with. Look, if it were the same woman, but the act itself was repeated with the same woman, so that is what the Gemara calls one avera. Granted, it was repeated many times, but it was one avera. Hey, shivcha is gufin muchlakim. But if it's five different women, that's called gufin muchlakim, that's different women. Each woman, therefore, results in its own separate carbon liability. So the Gemara says, look, we have the same exact concept by arayos. The Pasuk says, V'isha, Rashi quotes, it's, we mentioned it earlier, El Isha, right? Each woman is going to be its own separate act of liability. So again, it's going to be the same conclusion. That if a man has relations with more than one shivcha, he's going to be chayv a carbon for each and every shivcha. Nazir shenitma tumas harbe. We're on the top now of Testament base. And a nazir becomes tummy many times, he's going to bring only one carbon. Now, mantanam Rav Chista, Rav Yosef, Rav Yehudi Yidamer. Now, we've made this point earlier in the Masechta. We're going to make it again now. So let's go through this just very quickly. When you have a nazir and he becomes tameh, so now he has to first be matar himself. In other words, we're talking about tumas meis. So he has to be matar himself. It's a 7-day process. And then on the 8th day, he brings a set of karbanos, which the Torah instructs him to do. And then he starts counting again his nazirus all over. Okay. When does he start his count again? So basically we're going to go with two options. Option A. Option A is that he starts counting again on the 7th day of his tahara process. Why not? Meaning at that point in time now, he's tahor on the 7th day. Granted that he's not bringing his karbanos till tomorrow, but Karbonos is a separate issue. All said and done, he's now Tahor, so today now, the seventh day of his Tahor process, can be day one towards his renewed count. Option B is no, that he doesn't start counting until he brings his Karbonos, meaning the bringing of his Karbonos is really the conclusion of his Tahara process, and so therefore he cannot start counting until the eighth day, the day which he brings his Karbonos. So now the Gemara says, this Mishnah that we just learned, that you can be Tame multiple times and bring a Karbon for the multiple Tumas, is going to only work with one of those two opinions. The Gemara clarifies this point. So we're going to first go like Rav Yosef and Rav Yehuda, which means that the count can start on day 7. Look, and it'll go like this. On day 7 now, that was the seventh day of purification, so he becomes Tame again. Meaning after having gone through the Paraduma Tahara process, and he got sprinkled on day 3, and he got sprinkled on day 7, and he tovel the mikvah on day 7, so now according to Rav Yehuda, he can now start counting anew. Meaning today now, after toveling the mikvah, can be counted as day 1 towards his renewed count. And now what? And now he comes into contact with Tumas Mase again. Okay. So now, he's going to have to go through his whole Tahara process again Paraduma, again, right? But the point is like this. Really, it's a new Tumah, right? It's a new Tumah, meaning he has concluded his Tahara process, and he actually started counting his Nazirus again. So really, it's a new Tumah. But when is he obligated to bring his Karbanos? Not till tomorrow. Well, tomorrow he's not going to bring his Karbanos because he's got to go through the Tahara process again. But the point being is that we can call this a new Tumah, and a new Tumah, and this can happen as many times as it can happen, and nevertheless, he's only going to bring one Karban, even though he did actually restart counting once, maybe twice, maybe as many times as this event actually happened. However, because look, what's your alternative position? The alternative position is Rebbe, which is you don't start counting until day 8. Okay? Now, that's Rebbe's position. If we were following Rebbe's position, Rebbe can't fit into the Mishnah. And I know that's funny because Rebbe's the editor of the Mishnah, but he can't fit into our Mishnah. Gemara says, well, why? Kemedama Rebbe, Nazirus the Tahara ad Shmini lo chayala, Ida nitma b'shrina v'chazim v'nitma b'shrina kula tomarech lehi. Look, according to Rebbe, you become Tame on day 7. You know what that's called? That's called Tuma interrupted. Meaning, day 7, you're still in your Tahara process. You didn't even start counting your new Nazirus. So right now, all you're doing is just trying to become Tahor. Right? If you become Tameh on day 7, all it means now is that you're still Tameh. You just didn't successfully conclude your Tumah. And you're not counting, according to Rebbe, until day 8. So this is just Tumah interrupted. In Eden, Nitma B'Shmini, V'Chazav, Nitma B'Shmini. So now, according to Rebbe, let's try it this way. How about you become Tameh on day 8? Yeah, but day 8, even if you didn't bring your Karbanos yet, you're obligated to bring Karbanos. If you become Tameh on day 8, so you already are rung up for your Karban for the previous Tumah, and now if you become Tameh on day 8, you got to go through the Tahara process again, and you're going to have to bring a new set of Karbanos. So being Tameh on day 8, all that's going to do is just ring you up for the previous Tumah, and ring you up again when you become Tahara again. Kevin Diaz, Shasharul Akriv Karban, Mechaiva Kol Achas Va'achas, El Shmamina, Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda. So you see that our Mishnah can only work according to Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda. Fine. My Rebbe, the Gemara now just simply quotes the Braisa, Ditanya Vikidish Rosh Yamahu. On that day he sanctifies his head. The Torah is a little bit ambiguous. On that day he sanctifies his head, meaning he starts counting his Nazirus again. Which day are we talking about? Rebbe says it's the eighth day, the day that he brings his Karban, and Rebbe Yosef Rebbe Huda Omer Biyom Taglachso, on the day that he shaves his whole body, which is day 7. Next Mishnah. Hamekane l'ishto al yidei anashim harbe. Okay? Man's having issues with his wife. She keeps talking with other guys. And he keeps warning her, right? Don't seclude yourself with that guy, and don't seclude yourself with that guy. And he actually gives kinu, he gives warning to more than one man. Right? Everyone understand how the sota process works? Right? He has to give her a formal warning. That's called kinui. Then she secludes herself with that man. That's called stira. We don't know what happened in the room. She then is now a sota, what the Gemara refers to as sota safek, but she's a sota. She now has status as a sota, and she can't be with her husband anymore until she drinks from the mei sota. Fine. What if, let's say, they warned her not only to not seclude herself with this man, but also that man as well? Meaning that, unfortunately, his wife is talking with a lot of men, and he's warning her not to seclude herself with a number of men. And then stira, and then she secludes herself with more than one man. So how many times is she going to need to drink the mesota? And by extension, of course, that means also bring a karban, because together with the drinking of the mesota, there's also a karban, a mincha, so one. Meaning, this is now number three in the series of five different cases where multiple infractions, one karban will cover it all.
But she could die in the first one.
Umitzorash and is Naganagaim Harbe, or case number four now in our series of five, is a Mitzora who becomes who gets Tsaras on more than one occasion. What if you bring the birds? Remember that the Mitzora purification process requires the bringing of two birds on day one. One is going to shecht and one's going to go free. What if you bring the birds and you have tsaras again? Lo alu lo achiyavi chatas. So it doesn't count until you bring the carbon chatas. Rav Yehuda amar achiyavi yashaman. Rav Yehuda says until you bring your carbon asham. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But minan dechsev zos tsaras akanas tsaras achas leknuya harbe. So first the Gemara quotes a drasha in terms of the sota. One carbon covers many kinui stiras. Mitzorshin is not going to gaim harbe minan dechsev zos tsaras amitzor. Tsaras achas amitzorim harbe. One Torah, meaning one karban, even though you had more than one tsaras experience. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Didn't the Mishnah open up with the point that you only bring one karban for many mitzaras? The Mishnah, this last part of the Mishnah, is really incomplete. It was part of a bigger issue. Hey vitziporim v'nisnaga. Ain may be ella carbon echad. Ula akvuye b'anius v'ashiros lo mikva achiyavi chatas. When do you get rate locked for your carbon? Meaning a mitzvah is going to bring a carbon. Which carbon does he bring? So the Torah considers what his financial picture is. And when is rate lock? When do you get locked into your particular financial status? So Rav Yehuda Amar Ashiyavi Hashamal, and I'm sorry, so that's the machlokus of the Mishnah. So according to one opinion, it's when you bring your chatas, and the other one is when you bring your asham. So Tanan Hasam Mitzor Shehevi Hashamal VeHashir Akol Achachachatas. The Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. I'm going to guess this Mishnah comes from Negaim. Yep. That was an easy guess. Okay, so the Divrei Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hakol Holech Achar Asham. Okay, so Machlokus in the Mishnah Negayim, exactly when he's going to get rate locked. Is he going to get rate locked by the Chatos or by the Asham? Tanya Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Hakol Holech Achar Tziporim. And there's actually a third opinion, not mentioned in the Mishnah Negayim, mentioned in the Braisa, the opinion of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, which is the birds. The birds that he brings on day one, that is his rate lock. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rav Shlosh Mikraya Chadarshu. They're all looking at the same pasuk, and they're all darshing from the same pasuk. Ashelo sasi gadah b'taroso, Rabbi Shimon sava davar mechapro, Rabbi Yehuda sava davar machshiro, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov amar davar hagorim lo taharo mayniu tziporim. The Torah just simply says, Ashelo sasi gadah b'taroso, right? And he's poor when he's trying to be metar himself. What stage of tahar are we talking about? So the Gemara says, that's exactly the Nekudah Machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda says it's that which is Machshir, that's the Karban Chatas. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's the Mechaper, that's the Chatas. Rabbi Yehuda says it's the Machshir, that's the Asham. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's the Gorim. It's the thing that starts the whole ball rolling, which is the two birds on day one. Okay. All right, how about this? We ran out of time today. And I want to. Okay, maybe I'll make a small chart for Shabbos. I was going to write on the board today. Okay, we have a tough sugya coming up. I'm not going to start the sugya now. We'll start it tomorrow. Maybe I'll make a little chart. We'll hand out the chart tomorrow. Okay, we'll have a great time with this last sugya. All right, tomorrow our schedule is like this. We're going to get together 5:15 tomorrow afternoon. Mincha, I think, is called for 6:20, 6:25, something in that ballpark. So 5:15 is our designated meeting time. I'd like to say we're going to meet in the main shul, in the main sanctuary, although I find often that we end up I end up yelling at the end because of the people coming in. All right, I'll see if we can find ourselves the room. So tomorrow Shabbos, Hagadol writes the rabbis darshaning after Mincha. So we'll meet at 5:15. Also, over the course of Pesach, we'll make other.
There's nothing in between. From the Rosh, we go to Arvit, right?
Right. Okay, and over Pesach, we'll also have some extra learning time so that we get to cover the lost ground that we have. The hole that we made ourselves into. Anyway, tomorrow, I don't know how else to promote tomorrow's daf. It's a very difficult daf of Gemara tomorrow that we're going to be going through together. So if that doesn't get you here at 5:15, I don't know what will.